Steve said tonight he would like to study the book of Ezekiel after we finish Amos. If you would prefer that to the minor prophets, well, we'll let the class decide. All right, we'll prophesied in part along with several of the others. Hosea prophesied in the days of Uzziah, and so did Isaiah, and I think Jonah prophesied in his time, and Micah. I'd have to turn to the Kings as I did before to show you that Jonah prophesied in his time, but Micah prophesied in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. I guess he came just a little bit after Amos. Uzziah was preceded these three kings. And Amos, notice here it is stated that he was among the herdmen of Tekoa. If you have a Scofield Bible, you might turn to one of the maps. I'll show you where Tekoa was. Let's see, I have it marked on map 5. It's in map 5 and B5. It's right south of Bethlehem. There's the wilderness of Tekoa, and then Tekoa right west of the Dead Sea is 12 miles south of Jerusalem. Not quite as far south as Hebron, but it's 5 or 6 miles south of Bethlehem. See a little bit about the atlas side of it as we go along, as well as the other phases and chronology. When he got a scolding, he made the priest mad. The priest quoted some things about him that he didn't say. The 7th chapter and the 10th verse. Then Amaziah the priest, this is Amos now 7:10. Amaziah the priest of Bethel sent to Jeroboam king of Israel, saying, Amos hath conspired against thee in the midst of the house of Israel. The land is not able to bear all his words. For thus saith Amos, thus Amos saith, Jeroboam shall die by the sword. Now, we don't have any record that this took place, and we don't have any record that Amos said it. This is a quotation from the priest. Israel shall surely be led away captive out of their land. And Amaziah said unto Amos, O thou seer, go flee thee away into the land of Judah, and there eat bread and prophesy there. But prophesy not again any more at Bethel, for it is the king's chapel, and it is the king's court. I'll say he was a pretty courageous man. Then notice his answer, the 14th verse of the 7th chapter. I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was an herdman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit. And the Lord took me as I followed the flock, and the Lord said unto me, Go prophesy unto my people Israel. Now therefore hear thou the word of the Lord. Thou sayest, Prophesy not against Israel, and drop not thy word against the house of Isaac. Thus saith the Lord, thy wife shall be an harlot in the city, and thy sons and thy daughters shall fall by the sword. A very severe judgment against that man because of his rebellion against the prophet of the Lord. You remember Jesus said one time, which one of the prophets have you not persecuted? And he says, your fathers killed them and you take care of their sepulchers. And that was Israel's history. People many times don't like to hear the truth about themselves. There is an old adage, story, parable, I don't know exactly what to call it. A truth and a lie slept in the same field. And the next morning the lie got up and stole all truth's clothes and took off. And truth took off across the country, and every place he'd stop, he'd knock on the door to ask him if they'd seen the lie that stole his clothes, and everybody slammed the door in his face. Nobody wanted the naked truth. And it's still that way. People don't want naked truth. It just means he was a sheep herder. They call him a shepherd. But I think of it, I never fail to marvel at the ways of God. I suppose that two of the most quoted men in this country are Spurgeon and Moody, though Spurgeon, I don't think, was ever in this country. He was an English preacher. Spurgeon had a high school education, and Moody had an eighth grade education. Now, that doesn't mean that God looks down on education. It just means that he picks up and uses whom he will. One of the great literary artists of the centuries was a sheep herder, David. Yes, she was. It seems to me that she was told to go ahead and do the will of God, and that's where she would find her beloved. He was a small man, seemingly. This wasn't far from the area where the shepherds were. This was 6 miles from Bethlehem, just a short distance from where the shepherds were when the angels appeared to them. And in history, so often it has pleased God to pick up little people and use them. And so that's possibly the thought there. He was among the herdmen in Tekoa. the words of Amos. Now, before getting into this, there are a few interesting expressions that I jotted down. In the fourth chapter, in the sixth verse, how the Lord had chastised them, they didn't have anything to eat. I also have given you cleanness of teeth on all your cities, and want of bread in all your places, yet have you not returned unto me, saith the Lord. Notice the cleanness of teeth, an interesting expression. In the sixth chapter, in the eighth verse, he speaks of the excellency or the pride of Jacob. And the same expression is found in 8:7. The excellency of Jacob. I have sworn by the excellency of Jacob. Then the seventh chapter and the ninth verse, in this chapter he uses a couple of expressions are in this field. The ninth verse, the high places of Isaac shall be desolate. Now, it is interesting that Isaac gets a little place. These are descendants of Abraham, or they're the house of Israel. But Amos made a little bit of difference here. In the seventh chapter and the 16th verse, he said, drop thy word against the house of Isaac. This is rare. I don't think it's used in any other writing. And in the fourth chapter and the 13th verse, now, you don't think of the wind as being anything, but let's read this. For lo, he that formeth the mountains and createth the wind and declareth unto man what is his thought. Now, as far as I know, this is the only place in the Bible where it is spoken of as creating the wind. We read earlier of Israel in Hosea that he feedeth on the wind, but then it would be a hard world to live in without air, wouldn't it? In fact, you wouldn't live. And these are just expressions that he used that are a little peculiar to him. And you will, if you are observant as you go along, you will see that his figures and his similitudes are those that would have been taken up from his actions. Now, Paul was a tent maker. He spoke often of a tabernacle, used it as a figure. And others did similarly. David was a shepherd. He wrote, "The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want." This is in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. Now, you remember that Uzziah was a good king, by and all. But right at the last, when he was strong, his heart was lifted up. He intruded into the priest's office and was smitten with leprosy. In the days of Jeroboam, there were two Jeroboams, as we said earlier. One of them a descendant of Jehu. One of them that took the 10 tribes at the death of Solomon. This is 2 years before the earthquake. Quite pointed, and yet we know little about the earthquake. Notice Zechariah 14:5 seems to be a reference to this same earthquake. Since he preached in the days of Uzziah, notice what is said here. You shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountains shall reach unto Azel. Yea, ye shall flee, like as ye fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. Probably lots of things were held over from that because Uzziah lived a long time before Zechariah did. In fact, he lived 200 years before. And so the knowledge must have been carried on down. And in those days of superstition and such, now an earthquake is a terrible thing. I never was in an earthquake of any severity at all. But one time in Denver, I heard an earthquake coming. I thought a truck was coming down the street. It only cracked one little place in the wall, but when it struck the house, I jumped clear out of bed. And I guess they're a fearful thing. But he dates his prophecies from 2 years before the earthquake, so he must have written them after the earthquake. He said, "The Lord will roar from Zion." This is usually an expression used of the Lord when he's going to roar against the Gentiles, "and utter his voice from Jerusalem. And the habitations of the shepherds shall mourn, the top of Carmel shall wither." You remember Carmel. Carmel means fruitful. It was the place where Elijah called the people together and challenged the prophets of Baal to a contest, and they could scarcely refuse. A very fruitful place. And the Lord says conditions are going to get such that it will wither. That's how bad the conditions would be. Now, he addresses eight nations. Let us notice them before reading them. In the third verse, Damascus was the capital of Syria. The sixth verse, Gaza. This is one of the principal cities of the Philistines. In the ninth verse, Tyrus. And in the 11th verse, Edom. In the 13th verse, the Ammonites. And in the second chapter, in the first verse, Moab. And in the second chapter, in the fourth verse, Judah. And in the second chapter, in the sixth verse, Israel. And every time he says, because, he tells why the judgment was coming. And he starts with Damascus of Syria. He said, thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Damascus, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof. He was tolerant up to a point. They have thrashed Gilead. This was the eastern part of the Jewish possessions. Thrashed them with thrashing instruments of iron. Just destroyed them. Here's what he said. I will send a fire into the house of Hazael. Now Hazael was a very wicked man. Elisha told him he was going to destroy the children of Israel and rip up them that were with child, which shall devour the palaces of Ben-Hadad. I find this word Hadad interesting. Brother Hill had a young Arab woman marry one of his young men. Her name was what we call Hadad. She calls it Hadad, a little different in the pronunciation, but it's interesting to me that that name is still alive among them to this day. I will break also the bar of Damascus. Now the bars were bars to the gates. And cut off the inhabitant from the plain of Avon, and him that holdeth the scepter, that is the king, from the house of Eden, which was simply a place nearby. And the people of Syria shall go into captivity unto Kir, saith the Lord. And when you stop and think, as has been stated many times, people can't look and take an example. Now you stop and think about it. Tyrus, the Philistines, the Moabites, the Ammonites, as a people, have perished today. If you were obliged to go hunt a Moabite or an Edomite, you see, those countries just for so many years ceased to be inhabited. I read a story one time many years ago written by Kipling where there was a Parsi mentioned. The Parsis were the fire worshippers of Syria, or of Persia, many years ago. I thought they were all gone. And I got on a plane in Egypt one time and sat down by a Parsi of all people and rode with him for many miles. And he lived in Bombay. But so many of these people have ceased to be people. Now to Gaza. If you're a reader of history, you know that Alexander the Great conquered Gaza. If I remember correctly, he took their ruler and tied him behind his chariot and drug him around and around the city after he captured him. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Gaza, and for four I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they carried away captive the whole captivity to deliver them up to Edom. Now this was slave chasers, so to speak. We know somewhat the history of the slavery in this country and how it came to an end in England. I have been a couple of times to Jamaica. The island is approximately 90% colored. And it was the headquarters for the distribution of slaves by the English in the West Indies. And that's why there are so many colored people there. When I say colored, I mean anything besides Anglos. And the Edom seemed to have been one of the most cruel nations that ever lived. My brother, when he was in the army, he said he met, I believe it was an Armenian, and he said that man said he would kill a Turk anywhere he found one because of the way he had treated their people. The Lord said, the cities of the south shall be shut up and none shall open them. Judah shall be carried away captive, all of it. It shall be wholly carried away captive. And I'm going to get a little ahead of the story here on Edom in this verse that I just read. They delivered them to Edom. Now the book of Obadiah, it's a big book, isn't it? It has a whole of 21 verses. That's the book right after Amos. No, right after Jonah, I mean to say. No, right before Jonah. I get lost in my own book. The third verse of Obadiah speaks of his pride. And they had the city of Petra, the rock city. The third verse says they dwelled in the cleft of the rocks. Many of them were cave dwellers. The Lord said, I'll bring thee down. Again, he said in the fourth verse, I will bring thee down. And in the sixth verse, how are the things of Esau searched out? And he would destroy the wise men, according to the eighth verse. And he begins to tell them now what they had done in the tenth verse. For thy violence against thy brother Jacob. You remember they were twin brothers. But this is the nation that spring from Esau or Edom. Shame shall cover thee. Thou shalt be cut off forever. In the day that thou stoodest on the other side, in the day that the strangers carried away captive his forces, that's Israel's forces, and foreigners entered into his gates and cast lots upon Jerusalem, even thou wast as one of them. Thou shouldest not have looked on the day of thy brother in the day that he became a stranger, neither shouldest thou have rejoiced over the children of Judah in the day that of their destruction, neither shouldest thou have spoken proudly in the day of distress. Thou shouldest not have entered into the gate of my people in the day of their calamity, yea, thou shouldest not have looked on their affliction in the day of their calamity, nor have laid hands on their substance in the day of their calamity. Neither shouldest thou have stood in the crossway to cut off those of his that did escape. Neither shouldest thou have delivered up those of his that did remain in the days of distress. And then he speaks of the day of the Lord. But they were, Jeremiah speaks of their extreme cruelty. And they forgot that there was any relative connection. And now you think of Herod the Great. Why the world calls a man great like Herod and Alexander the Great? Why? Now you think of a man like Herod sending forth and actually murdering the babies in Bethlehem. Herod was an Edomite, and the Herods spring from that line. The seventh verse says, I will send a fire on the wall of Gaza, which shall devour the palaces thereof. I will cut off the inhabitant from Ashdod, and him that holds the scepter from Ashkelon. I will turn mine hand against Ekron, and the remnant of the Philistine shall perish, saith the Lord God. There are some things that the critics cannot deny. As a people, the Philistines ceased to be, didn't they? They are no more. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Tyrus, and for four I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they delivered up the whole captivity to Edom, and remembered not the brotherly covenant. Solomon had made a covenant with Tyrus, and they did furnish that much of the timber and such that went into the temple that was erected. They forgot this. And all that they could capture, they delivered them to Edom. And the Lord said, I will send a fire upon the wall of Tyrus, which shall devour the palaces thereof. Nebuchadnezzar held them in siege for a long time. Alexander the Great built a causeway. They were on a rock island out from the shore. He managed to build out to them and destroyed them. And how solemn that God doesn't forget. Take, now you look at, let's use Africa for an illustration. At one time in history, the strongest churches in the world were in Africa. And I suppose of all the continents, Africa is probably the most backward today, isn't she? And it seemed as though they ought to be one of the most forward. Egypt at one time was one of the most advanced nations from the world viewpoint of civilization. Ethiopia was a strong nation at one time, and there have been others. But look at them today. And so with these that rejected the Lord, Palestine was possibly, well, there's no possibly about it. Palestine was the most privileged nation in the entire world. For 3.5 years, they had the ministry of the Lord Jesus Christ. He took 12 men and trained them and sent them out with power, tremendous power. And a little later in life, he called 70 others and sent them out. And they came back like a bunch of children with new toys. Lord, even the demons are subject to us in thy name. They were just saturated with gospel. On the day of Pentecost and following, there were other ministers raised up. Remember the six that are commonly called deacons, such as Stephen, who was stoned to death, and Philip the evangelist, and Peter and James and John ministered there. Paul preached in Jerusalem, testified, was there, and around 70 AD, they were, as a people, practically wiped off the map. It is said that there was a Jew crucified on any tree that could hold a Jew, and there were too many Jews for the trees. They were carried to Rome, killed and butchered, sold into captivity until there was nobody to buy them. And such happened to the Philistines, and God makes these predictions, and they seem so, it just seemed like it couldn't be. In Jeremiah, it is said the children of Israel are saying, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord are these. And the Lord said, you go look at Shiloh and see what I did to it. And as you know, the house of the Lord was built. Ezekiel saw the glory of the Lord lifting up, leaving the temple, going to the mountain east of the city, and the Lord abandoned his inheritance. Nehemiah and others, Ezra, Zerubbabel, and Jeshua before Nehemiah, built the temple. Nehemiah built the walls, and Herod remodeled the temple, and in 71 AD, again, it was burned, destroyed. They turned down the gospel, and Tyre remained so ungodly. Now the Lord turns to Edom. Edom hated Israel. You know, the hatred of the Orient somehow just doesn't die. Now you look to this day how the Arabs hate Israel. It just won't die. And, now they claim to be Ishmael, but they can't be. Now you see, I talked to an Arab one time, and I said, all that call themselves Arabs, I said, they can't be descended from Ishmael. And here was what I put to him. You see, Iraq and Iran and Syria and Egypt and all of these nations are Mohammedan. And I said, before Ishmael was born, there was Egypt and Babylon, which Babylon was Iraq and Iran. They held that part of the country. And Syria existed. When Abraham left Babylon, he came up to what we call Syria, that part of the world. And he said, well, they're Arabs by absorption. They have been absorbed into it, he said. And they've made that profession, but they actually can't claim that. If there are any Edomites left, and perhaps there are, they would be absorbed into these people, just like the other little peoples. If there are any Philistines left, they were absorbed into the other nations. Probably when the Assyrians carried away the captive Israelites, they took many others. And then Nebuchadnezzar carried away the Jews. In the time of Jeremiah, many of the Jews went into Egypt. Then the Romans carried them away. And those that have gone back, well, they're probably from the various tribes. No way to identify but one group of people. That's the Kohens. The Hebrew word for priest is Kohen and Kohen. And they are the descendants, would be the descendants of Aaron. This would make them Levites. And I knew a Jew whose name was Benjamin ben Levi. The Hebrew pronunciation is not Levi, but Levi. Benjamin, son of Levi. That's the way we would say it. Ben is the Hebrew word for son. When Rachel was dying, she named her son Benoni, son of my sorrow. But Jacob changed his name to Benjamin, son of my right hand. So perhaps, well, he claimed to be a Levite. And if there are any Edomites left, but as a people, they have perished. That is, they have lost their identity. Remarkable how the Jews have kept their identity so clearly. For three transgressions of Edom, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he did pursue his brother with the sword, and did cast off all pity, and his anger did tear perpetually, and he kept his wrath forever. He wouldn't get over it. And they were the enemies of Israel, and Israel was their enemies. When Israel came out of the land of Egypt, they wanted to walk across Edom's land, and Edom wouldn't let them. He made them walk clear around. It was during that time that they murmured, and God sent the snakes among them. I will send a fire upon Teman. It is one of their prominent cities, which shall devour the palaces of Bozra, another one of their prominent cities. That's where the trouble is going to start in the great battle of Armageddon. Who is this that cometh from Bozra? Remember Isaiah 63 with stained garments? And so notice the because in each one of these cases. In the third verse, because they have thrashed Gilead. In the sixth verse, because they carried away captive the whole captivity. And in the ninth verse, because they delivered up the whole captivity to Edom, that's another nation. And in this 11th verse, because they did pursue his brother with the sword and did cast off all pity. The Orient is cruel. human life is cheap. And I read an article in a magazine recently how much more calloused this country has been since we have permitted abortion. How much more people are just callous to things. In the on the radio, it said that 1/3, I believe it was, of teenage girls that go to the hospital go to give birth to a child, and that doesn't count the 90-some thousand teenage girls a year that have abortions. I will send a fire upon Teman, which shall devour the palaces of Basra. The scripture says this, and I've touched on the shedding of blood of helpless infants. The Lord said, thou shalt take no satisfaction for the life of a murderer. No satisfaction. For blood, it defileth the land, and it can be cleansed only by the blood of him that shed it. And so the Lord won't overlook any of these things. Did it ever occur to you that nobody ever got by with sin before God? Jesus Christ paid the total price, or nobody would ever be forgiven. He will in no wise clear the guilty, we read in the book of Exodus, and that was what God himself said. Well, back to our chapter now about Ammon. You see, Ammon as a people doesn't exist. Perhaps some of their descendants might exist as absorbed among others, but this we do not know. For three transgressions of the children of Ammon, and for four I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they ripped up the women with child of Gilead, that they might enlarge their borders. They wanted to see to it that no more children were born to the Israelites. I will kindle a fire in the wall of Rabbah, and it shall devour the palaces thereof, with shouting in the day of battle, with the tempest in the day of the whirlwind. You know where the Defender magazine headquarters is over here on, what is it, Linwood? The Defender magazine, that used to be in Wichita. In the area of Rabbah, there was a town, I don't know the size of it, that was called Philadelphia. And their publisher, their magazine, said one time, now remember, this is the Philadelphia that's mentioned in the Bible. I almost laughed out loud. The Philadelphia in the Bible was in Asia. That is in what is modern Turkey. This other is in Asia too, but certainly that wasn't the Philadelphia of the Bible. It shall devour the palaces thereof with shouting in the day of battle, with a tempest in the day of the whirlwind, and their king shall go into captivity, he and his princes together, saith the Lord. Now to Moab. Now you remember who Ammon and Moab were. They were the sons of Lot by his daughters. Thus saith the Lord, for three transgressions of Moab, and for four I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because he burned the bones of the king of Edom into lime. This kind of makes me wonder about the practice of cremation. There was a time when the children of Israel attacked Moab. I think we'll turn to that for just a moment. In the third chapter of the book of 2 Kings, these little nations that surrounded Israel, they went against him, and a terrible thing took place. The various countries, Edom and Israel and Judah, were against Moab. And the 27th verse speaks of a terrible thing that the king of Moab did. Then he took his eldest son that should have reigned in his stead and offered him for a burnt offering upon the wall. Can you imagine a man getting so desperate as to take his own son and offer him for a sacrifice? And there was great indignation against Israel, and they departed from him and returned to their own land. Now tradition among the Jews and Josephus was that after they withdrew, the Israelites and the Judahites withdrew, that Moab took vengeance on the king of Edom and burned his bones to lime. We do not know whether that can't be proven from the Bible, but it was something that certainly wasn't approved of the Lord. But I will send a fire upon Moab, and it shall devour the palaces of Kirioth. Now Moab was such an ungodly people. They and the Ammonites worshipped Moloch, as he's called sometime, and this is the one to whom human sacrifices, babies, were offered. And again, well, people used to wonder how God could be so cruel as to send Israel in to destroy the nations. And in later years, the archaeologists begin to make finds that they wondered that he didn't destroy them sooner. A Jew told me this story. true or false. I can't corroborate it. But you know that the archaeologists find many interesting things. And they found a picture in a cave